The Capital Investment Committee hearing for March 29th is called to order. Members, we do not have a quorum, and so we'll move straight to bills. We have 19 bills on the agenda today, allocated about 4 to 5 minutes each. I ask that our members keep their remarks short so that your testifier could proceed with the time. And so Representative Ryer, you're presenting on behalf of Representative Richardson, House File 2437. I understand there's an A1 amendment. Can you explain the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The A1 amendment inserts that the grant is to go to Met Council.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that builds on the greenway system in Dakota County, which is a little bit piecemeal right now. It's an important piece, and I would just like to turn it over to Commissioner Halverson to tell us more about it.
Welcome back to the House, Commissioner Halverson, and please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lori Halverson, and I am Dakota County Commissioner representing District 3. I want to thank you for the opportunity to give you a little more information about House File 2437, which would fund additional pedestrian safety improvements along our river-to-river greenway. This is a regional greenway that spans 7 miles from the Mississippi River in Lilydale through Mendota Heights and West St. Paul to the Mississippi River Greenway in South St. Paul. As Representative Ryer stated, this is a connector portion, and we are looking to help reduce conflicts between bikes and pedestrians and highway traffic along Highway 149, which is a major state highway, multiple lanes along a very busy corridor in West St. Paul. Six of the 7 planned grade-separated crossings along the River-to-River Greenway are in place. And the remaining grade-separated crossing that's planned for this greenway is a pedestrian underpass along Dodd Road and Highway 62. Frankly, people just cannot get from one side of Highway 149 to the other, and it is not safe. And so this upgrade is going to enhance safety and enhance people's ability to get around in the Mendota Heights community on foot or on bike, which they prefer. There's a lot of amenities in that area. So, and if this funding is secure, the county will partner with the Department of Transportation and the City of Mendota Heights to complete this section of the River-to-River Greenway. As with all of our projects, we know that you are looking for a county match, and it is on our county agenda planning to vote for the necessary match to gain inclusion into your bonding bill. And I thank you for your time and attention and your care for our pedestrians in Dakota County.
Thank you, Commissioner. Seeing no questions, closing comments, Representative Ryer.
On Representative Richardson's behalf, appreciate your consideration. Thanks.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, Representative Coulter, House File 1044. Welcome. Please proceed.
Excuse me. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 1044 is a funding request for construction of a new public health building in the city of Bloomington. After the last few years, I certainly don't need to tell this committee how critical our local public health staff is to Minnesotans. Our staff in Bloomington and the excellent work that they do, though, is severely hampered by an outdated facility that is in desperate need of replacement. Those of you who have been on this committee before may have even seen this facility on a previous bonding tour. Built in 1960, our public health building was planned for a 40-year lifespan, and since you're on the Capital Investment Committee, I'm assuming you're good enough at math to know that we are well beyond that. Housed within this facility, our Bloomington public health staff serve not only our residents, but also perform local public health services for residents of Richfield and Edina. The reach of this work, though, goes far beyond the borders of those communities. As you can see from the handout in your packets, our public health staff has provided thousands of vaccinations and immunizations for Minnesotans from every county in the metro area and several in greater Minnesota as well. Replacement of this facility is critical to ensuring that our clients, the folks who come to our staff for basic health services, are welcomed and served in the way that they deserve. And I can turn things over to my testifiers.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed, whoever is going.
I'm Sean Nelson, council member and acting mayor for the city of Bloomington. And I'd like to thank you for your time today to discuss the bonding request for the public health facility in Bloomington. As a reminder, Bloomington Public Health Facility serves about 180,000 residents, both in Bloomington, Edina, and Richfield, as well as serving people that visit our community to recreate and or to work. The public health serves communities with an emphasis on vulnerable populations. These include individuals and families that have historically experienced health disparities due to housing, income, jobs, racial status, single women. We also include immigrants and refugees in that, and of course, one of the our BIPOC community as well. As Representative Coulter noted, the facility was built in the 1960s and due to growth within our communities has outlived its useful life at this point. The city is requesting $10.13 million in bonding funds to design, construct, furnish, and equip the new public health facility to serve these three communities plus the people that visit them. The total project cost is estimated to be $20.27 million, and we recognize in Bloomington and our partner communities the importance of not just doing the right thing to help those people in need, but the long-term value that it brings to our communities. And so I thank you for your consideration of this. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to turn it over to our Assistant City Manager, Mike Sable, to talk about more of the details of the request.
Mr. Sable, you got 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you, and thank you, Acting Mayor. The city has conducted a facility assessment in 2015 and found problems with the critical infrastructure, HVAC, electrical, which were all original to the building. Replacement parts are becoming harder to find due to the age of the systems. And also, as noted earlier, the Bloomington Public Health Building serves direct service to clients and customers such as the Women, Infant, Children Supplemental Nutrition Program, nutrition education, breastfeeding, chest feeding, counseling and support, and food benefits for eligible who are pregnant, postpartum, or have children up to 5 years of age. In addition, vaccinations have been provided at the public health facility to who are uninsured or underinsured through the Minnesota Vaccines for Children program. This is a building that serves vulnerable populations and serves those people well. A new public health building would provide modern, welcoming, and a more effective environment for individuals seeking health screenings and care, and also provide a wonderful service to our staff who serve the community so well. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think I'm under 2 minutes and appreciate your time.
Thank you. Quick closing comments, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In closing, I would just say, you know, if we think back to sort of the height of the pandemic, to say nothing of the significant challenges that we've faced since then, and all the incredible work that our local public health staff has done, and especially considering the reach that our Bloomington public health staff have, the case for this investment, which will be matched by the city of Bloomington, is, I think, a very strong one, and really just want to strongly encourage inclusion of it in your bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have two bills for Chair Lizgard. First up, House File 1699. Welcome, Chair. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to bring 1699 before you, which is much needed to continue the spur for Mesabi Trail from Aurora to Hoyt Lakes. Members, the Mesabi Trail in northeast Minnesota is a gem. It stretches from the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids to the Boundary Waters in Ely, with a few small gaps to be completed. Currently, over 150 miles is completed, totally completed, there will be 165 miles of continuous paved biking walking trail linked 28 communities. Visitors to the trail will find a 10-foot wide asphalt trail built on the old railroad beds, abandoned highways, and logging and mining roads. And with me today, I have a testifier to...
Welcome, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Sarah Cicchetto. I am the Deputy Director of the St. Louis and Lake Counties Regional Railroad Authority. I am here today in support of House File 1699 and want to thank Representative Liz Lagarde for introducing the bill and for Representative Scraba for your support as well. This rail authority owns and maintains the North Shore Scenic Railroad that runs from Duluth to Two Harbors. We have also proudly built and now maintain the Mesabi Trail, a 10-foot-wide paved bike trail that extends from the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids to the Boundary Waters in Ely. To date, we have completed 152 miles of the master plan length of 165 miles. This next construction season, we will begin to close the two remaining gaps, which we expect to have finished in 2024. As such, we have preliminary plans in progress for a grand opening event in June of 2025. Over the years, the Rail Authority has received numerous requests from communities that want to be connected to the Mesabi Trail Corridor. White Lakes was the first of these communities. In 2015, their city council met and agreed unanimously to officially request a spur connection. At that time, the Rail Authority was not in a position to grant the request as we still had too many miles of the main trail to finish. Now approaching completion, we can begin tying in these communities. At the full plan length of 165 miles, the Mesabi Trail is one of the longest, if not the longest, fully paved bike trails in the country. Most other long-distance bike trails are hard-packed gravel or crushed limestone. The only other trail that compares is the Paul Bunyan Bike Trail, which runs from Bemidji to Brainerd and is a total of 115 miles. At 165 miles, the Mesabi Trail eclipses that distance and is at least 95% ADA accessible, with solid paved surfacing for all but a small packed gravel portion in the Darwin-Myers Wildlife Management Area. It is not a typical rail trail either, because it is not straight and it is not flat. This trail has 3,300 feet of elevation change over the whole length, and there are numerous curves and bridges giving a cyclist an exciting and dynamic ride through a rich area in history and natural resources. The beauty of the Mesabi Trail, aside from the stunning scenery, is the fact that it connects and unifies 28 small communities along the Mesabi Iron Formation and provides the diversity needed to strengthen the area's economy. Northeastern Minnesota is full of outdoor recreational opportunities. Fishing, boating, and hunting have been some of the most popular pastimes for many years. OHV use has increased, but cycling is having its moment now, and the Mesabi Trail is in a prime position to entice biking enthusiasts to experience all there is to offer here. Not only is the trail a destination in and of itself, but it provides access to other area attractions such as the Redhead Mountain Biking Park and Giants Ridge Golf Resort. This proposed segment of the trail from Aurora to Hoyt Lakes is a 5.5-mile spur that will travel through undeveloped lands owned by Blandon and Elite, two companies that the Rail Authority has worked with successfully in the past. The remainder of the route will be within the County Road 110 right-of-way. Connecting the vibrant and active community of Hoyt Lakes to the Mesabi Trail Corridor will provide needed amenities for the users of the trail, including lodging, restaurants, and other attractions. And we have already seen the need for these amenities increase. This past year, 2022, the Rail Authority began a marketing campaign to reach national audiences. In just 6 months last year, we saw a marked increase of interest on the website and more requests for information. Over 286,000 users were logged on our trail counters over 10 months in 2022, and the shuttle and trip planning services are overwhelmed. Our marketing firm started the next phase of the campaign at the beginning of March, including the release of multiple videos and social media posts. The Mesabi Trail has the great ability to unite communities, reconnect families of all ages and abilities, because they can all use this trail, and it can strengthen the economic diversity of the region. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Director. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I'm trying to remember how much money we have spent on the Mesabi Trail from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. And do you have a total amount?
Director.
Mr. Chair, I do not have a total amount at this point. But we have received numerous grants from the Environmental Fund.
Chair Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, have all of the appropriation project plans been completed for repayment or for reimbursement? I think there were some 2014 and 2016 and 17, 18 appropriations that have been out. Are those all completed?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Chair Hansen, most of those have now been closed out and completed.
Director, if you could provide the committee with the information on how much have been spent through LCCMR, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Quick closing comments, Chair.
It's a great bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 2973, Chair Lizegar, please proceed.
Okay, once again, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for hearing House File 2973 for Embarrass Regional Fair Association. Embarrass is my hometown, where I was raised and where most of my family still lives. It is a rural community in northeast Minnesota founded by the Finnish immigrants in the late 1800s. Timber Hall is the center of the Embarrass community. It is the gathering place, from weddings to dances to pancake breakfast to the fair and so much more. This timber structure, is where our community comes together. I can't tell you how many hours I spent there and what a centerpiece it is for that part of the region. I recently visited when I got the phone call, and I went to inspect when they talked about what was currently happening, and I think you guys do have a picture of me knocking on the wood. I had a video. I showed Representative Scraba, what is happening. And structurally, it needs a lot of work. And so that's what this is for, is to make this wonderful, this wonderful building and part of the community live on.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Tana Johnson. I'm here with the Embarrass Region Fair Association out of Embarrass, Minnesota. I thank you, Representative Lislegard, for authoring this file, House File 2973, for a $1.5 million appropriation for the Embarrass Region Fair and the Timber Hall facilities. The Timber Hall is one of the nation's largest freestanding timber structure at 60 by 144 feet. It was built in 1992 with local red pines. It is a unique log structure designed to reflect the building style of the Finnish settlers. With a capacity of 450 people, including the kitchen, restrooms, office, and storage, the Timber Hall is the main building that sits on the 40-acre site. The property includes a riding arena, multi-purpose outdoor buildings, and over 10 acres of green space, making it a primary community-gathering location with unlimited possibilities. The entire property is owned by the Embarrass Region Fair Association, which is 100% volunteer-led 501c3, whose mission is to connect people and join communities. The surrounding 22 towns and townships within our region, such as Ely, Tower, Babbitt, and Aurora, we're committed to preserving our community gathering space. We logged over 3,000 volunteer hours in 2022 alone. The facility is used for pancake breakfasts, weddings, concerts, funerals, fundraisers, horse shows, and so many other social gatherings. We impacted over 3,000 to 5,000 people annually. And in addition to that, for the last 83 years, this site has been the property of the annual three-day fair, and that draws over 4,000 people. So whether using the Timber Hall for a fair or local events, it truly is a community gathering space. But like any 31-year-old building, it is in need of attention. Our Timber Hall needs major maintenance, repairs, and upgrades. There are rotting logs that need replacing, an inefficient kitchen, outdated electrical and plumbing. The roof needs major modifications. Restrooms, doors, and other parts of the facility need to be handicap accessible, as well as other structural needs and so much more. Truth is, we simply cannot meet the challenges of preserving this exceptional facility by ourselves. The upgrades would substantially increase the use of Timber Hall facility, making it more functional and attractive facility, attracting more events and more use for the community. Continuing the legacy of this facility is worthwhile and has an impact on future generations. Representative Lislegard, Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for considering this request for an extremely valuable community resource.
Thank you. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. It's a very unique building. It's big. It's lots of open air. Lots of horse people go there. There's all kinds of people that use this facility. And this is a kind of a cultural spot where everyone gathers during any big event in the northeastern Minnesota, not just for Embarrass. It's a great project. And the logs really are dry rotted inside. You can hear it. So something needs to be done. Thank you.
Quick closing comments, Chair Lislegard.
Well, the less you have, the more it means to you. And this project means a whole lot to the people of Embarrass, and it means a whole lot to me. So I would appreciate your support on this.
Thank you, Chair. Next on the agenda, Chair Peckerfin, House File 2546. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. House File 2546 would provide a one-time $4 million to create a statewide distribution hub for every meal. My testifier will talk more about every meal, but if folks are familiar with backpack programs that provides food to kids over the weekend, as we have discussed at length in this body, this legislative session, there are folks in our communities who are hungry, and a lot of those kids, the primary place where they get their food is at school, so then what happens in the weekends? And that is something that Every Meal addresses. I've been proud to volunteer with backpack programs for many years, along with my children, and it's been great to see the impact of Every Meal in our home community in Roseville, but they do serve 42 other school districts throughout the state and not just in the metro area. I know that time is short, so I will turn it over to my testifier to talk more about the work of Every Meal and what we would do with these funds.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Sure. My name is Rob Williams. I'm the president and founder of Every Meal. Every Meal began in 2010 as a project of a church when one principal came to us and said, there's kids in our school that are hungry. They don't have food to eat on the weekend. Is there anything you can do to help the kids in my school? We started with just 27 kindergartners in 2010. Now we, just a few months ago, provided our 10 millionth meal to Minnesota kids, serving kids across Minnesota, making sure they have full kitchen cupboards at home, something to eat on the weekends. We're almost completely community funded. We're not government operated or a government funded program. We're instead made up of community responding to and addressing its needs directly. We're asking for a one-time grant of $4 million, which will be matched philanthropically, to invest in a central distribution hub from which we can continue our community-funded mission to fight child hunger in Minnesota. Right now, our Roseville facility is significantly over capacity, and we have 113 schools on our waiting list. You have a letter of support that we provided from over 40 different organizations and school districts, including the Minnesota Association for Children's Mental Health, the Minnesota School Nutrition Association, the Minnesota School Social Workers Association, from school districts, including the largest, five largest, Anoka, Hennepin, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Osseo, District 196, as well as small districts, both in Twin Cities and outstate, including Jordan, Orono, Robbinsdale, South St. Paul, Watertown, Mayor, Wayzata, West Tonka, Worthington, and more. Every Meal work, I truly believe, transcends politics. We have donors, volunteers, supporters all over the aisle. We're an example of how the local community can support its own children. And our ask is for this one-time support from the state so we can continue working with our philanthropic community partners to serve our Minnesota kids.
Thank you. Quick closing comment, Chair Beckerman.
I would really appreciate your support to continue to keep our kids fed. Thank you, Chair Lee.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, Chair Fisher, House File 2135. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 2135. This is a bill to request dollars to start phase two design for East Metro Public Safety Training Agency. This is a project that was originally funded by the state about 10 years ago on the fire side. There was space to have it expanded out to do joint training between our public safety folks. This is has the activity of over 19 different communities, and we also have Central College does their fire training there, along with the Anoka Academy Fire Academy and Ramsey Chiefs Fire Academy. I've brought our public safety and service chiefs with me to also explain a little bit more about the project.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Michael Mondo. I'm the Fire and EMS Chief for the Maplewood Fire Department. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to testify on House File 2135. This funding will help organizations from the region meet the training needs of our public safety professionals. Currently, the East Metro Public Safety Training Facility is primarily a training facility for firefighters, which is operated by a joint powers agreement between the cities of North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, and Lake Elmo. The training facility is utilized by fire departments throughout the region and is expected to be utilized nearly every day in 2023. As Representative Fisher mentioned, Century College is a significant facility partner and spends hundreds of hours each year training current and future firefighters at the training facility. The challenges facing public safety today are more dynamic than in the past, and we have experienced the benefits of firefighters, police officers, EMS professionals, and embedded social workers coming together to serve the community. As the community's expectations for public safety increase, training facilities are not keeping up with the demand. Unfortunately, the East Metro Public Safety Training Facility is rarely utilized by law enforcement, EMS agencies, embedded social workers, and similar due to a lack of functionality and availability. Additional funding would allow fire, police, EMS, and embedded social workers to train side-by-side in de-escalation, incident command, reality-based training, and rescue operations. Incorporating first responder mental and physical health components into the facility is also of extreme importance. We recognize that $75,000 may seem like a small amount in comparison to many of the requests that you will review. However, this is a regional asset that is operated by a joint powers agreement, and we'd have difficulty funding this project with local levy. If funded, a space needs and facility assessment will help us meet future and current training needs in the region in an effort to exceed the community's expectations. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Chief. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fisher of the testifiers. Just so I get this straight, there is an existing facility that you want to make improvements to?
Chief.
Yes, that is correct.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chief. Where is the nearest training facility to you?
Chief.
Representative Erdahl, the training facility is at Century 120 and County Road 14 on the eastern portion of Maplewood.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You misunderstood. Not where your facility is located, the next closest to you.
Chief.
Representative Erdahl, the next closest would be in Edina that I'm aware of, or down in Burnsville would be another facility that I'm aware of that's different functionality. But
thank you.
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fisher. And Representative Erdahl, you've been up in the lift there, I think, years ago, because this was funded in, when you first built it, and you've really lived up to what you said then, and I'm certain you'll do well now. I'm partnering with the local college, getting young people in the, you know, in the industry or whatever you call it, learning these skills, and then you've been really good stewards, and I just, I'm certain that you would do the same with this money too. So, thank you, Representative Fisher.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you, Representative Lilly, for reminding me that was the one where they put me up there and then threatened to drop me if I didn't support it.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
So, Chief, I just have a question. Right now, do you have any current partnership with any state law enforcement or emergency personnel?
Mr. Chair, we are working on that. We have Public Safety Director Brian Bierdeman here to help galvanize the law enforcement community to work together to make this more of a public safety-centric facility. We have some law enforcement utilization. The facility, when it was conceptualized, was built primarily for fire departments at the time. And we've had communities from Elk River to Baldwin, Wisconsin, to Invergrove Heights, Minnesota, using it, including Minneapolis and St. Paul utilize it for their fire training academies. We want to try to make, we work together each day side by side, and we want to try to be able to train that way, and this would allow us to do that more effectively.
Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Lee. And expand is when it was originally built, it was phase one. There was a phase two that eventually was where we're moving to now that allows for the joint training to happen in our public service and public safety area. Because that's one of the areas that we're seeing such a shortage of, and the opportunity for the police to be able to continue their training, they are also very limited as to where they can go.
So, Chief, why I'm asking, trying to figure out how much do you charge fee for state partners? I have heard from the BCA that some of these local law enforcement training facilities charge the state more to use their facilities, and so they decide not to. And so can you comment on if we were to appropriate this, how would you work with our state partners, and are you going to overcharge them or not?
Mr. Chair, all of our rentals are a standard price, and we believe that they're very fair for the rental fees for the East Metro Public Safety Training Facility. We partner with Century College, a state educational institution. We do not charge anyone externally more. There is a benefit to joining the joint powers agreement, but you have more upfront costs for that commitment. But as far as charging external entities more to use our site, we want this to be a truly a regional asset, and that relies on local, county, and state-level entities to train together and have access to the site, and this funding will allow us to expand it to have more availability to do so.
Thank you. Quick close of comments, Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee. I feel that the building out phase two here is a great next step in our joint public service and safety training needs in the area. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, Representative Keeler, House File 2343. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. House File 2343 is a $3 million ask to fund Red Lake Nation College here in Minneapolis. I've said in a lot of places, as an indigenous person with 4 degrees, I've never had a teacher in the front of the classroom who looks like me, or a college or education system that was designed to understand who I was and my needs from a cultural component. We also know that 24% of Native Americans are enrolled in higher education compared to the 41% of the rest of Americans. And we really believe that this investment is investing in the future of not only education, but the future economy and opportunity growth that we have in the indigenous community. This is in a wonderful location right across from the Viking Stadium, right on the trail, so it's really accessible. We know that a lot of the Native Americans no longer necessarily live on the reservation. A lot of them live in urban areas, which are here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so with that, Chair, I'll hand it over to my testifier. Thank you.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, I'm Dan King, President, Red Lake Nation College, and also one of the hereditary chiefs from the Red Lake Nation. I would like to thank Chair Lee, Vice Chair Ryer, Republican lead, Representative Erdahl, and all the committee members for hearing this bill. I would also like to give a big thank you to Representative Keeler, who's our chief author of this, and also one of the champions for Native people in Minnesota. You know, I see a lot of familiar faces here today in the committee, and over the past couple years and few months, many of you folks have heard our Tribal College and Red Lake Nation College story. And in your info packets, you'll see two summaries that I hope you can take a few minutes to take a look at. The summaries for HF 2343, which is for $3 million to complete the construction and renovation of our Red Lake Nation College Minneapolis site. I just wanted to take 1 minute to give you two main points on this bill that I wanted to reiterate. Number one is the Red Lake Tribe and Red Lake Nation College planned, bought, and paid for this project a few years ago. When we started, our tribe spent $4.2 million on these buildings in downtown Minneapolis. And the project was, at that time, where the college added $8 million in renovation, so the total $12.2 million. So it was 100% bought and paid for. It was completed, so we were done. And then, of course, COVID happened, and inflation and material cost increases from construction, and so then it ballooned up to $15.2 million, and that's the issue we have, is we're about $3 million short, and we wished we didn't have to come here today, but this is a vitally important project for our Native folks. And we do need your help. We need $3 million to complete this project. And $3 million will be the final 20%. And the way I look at it is the state really could be the hero in this project. You know, we got federal funding. We got some private funding. And we even have a national education conference of 2,000 people for 1 week coming in 2024 in March. They want to come there because the Tribal College is going to be in downtown Minneapolis. So it's going to be a big benefit to the state. And the state really would be providing that final 20% of the project. And really, we're not asking for a handout. We're asking for a hand up. We're close to that mountaintop. We're right there to finish this project, but we just need a little bit of help for this final step. So I wanted to make those few points in that Red Lake is doing this in Red Lake Nation, but it's for 120,000 natives in Minnesota and 50,000 natives in the Twin Cities. So it's not just for Red Lake Nation. So if people say, well, why is Red Lake asking for this just for themselves? It's for all the natives in the state. So those are a couple main points I wanted to mention. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Chief. Chair Pawlowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we took testimony on the amazing success of this college in higher education. And what they've done is absolutely startling with their students and with their programs. This is a most worthy project to fund.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good to see you again, Chief. It's always good to talking with you and visiting with you. And you took the words out of my mouth as far as who it is actually going to serve, not just for the Red Lake Band, but it is for the Indian community all over. So I appreciate you coming down and having this bill presented. Just the work that has been done as far as the tribal college on Red Lake Reservation, it's good. It's a good thing. And if this is going to help get it completed, then I'll take a good look at it.
Representative Keeler, closing comments.
It's a future investment. We always believe that what we invest in impacts the next seven generations. So we appreciate you. We appreciate the consideration. PLMA.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 1729, Representative Hansen. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. It will be just me today. Unfortunately, my city manager couldn't make it, but I will be just passing along some of their talking points as well. In 2012, the city of Savage built the Savage Sports Center at the request of several local sports associations so that our kids could play and socialize together during the winter months. Not only is this a haven for winter fun in our community, this turf is also a popular place to be in our summer months. The Sports Center is located in Community Park, where there is also a beautiful path around a little lake with sunsets that are breathtaking. There's pickleball courts, a skate park, pavilions for birthday parties and family reunions, a must-see playground that's widely loved, our Environmental Learning Center baseball fields, and so much more. This is where our community gathers for summer fireworks, too. Community Park is where we build and sustain our connection to each other, and we don't really have a downtown or a main street as a part of our community, but this park and this sports center serves as our hub for fun and togetherness. When the Savage Sports Center opened, it quickly became a regional draw, attracting teams from as far away as Canada. The facility regularly attracts families and teams from Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities Metro, and it's one of a kind facility in Scott County. Our challenge is double-edged because as great as this facility has been, it's being loved to death. The city has maintained the turf well past its recommended useful life, but it now needs to be replaced to prevent injuries and more. Late in 2022, we discovered a drainage issue that complicated the turf replacement. Fixing the drainage issue has increased the turf replacement cost by over $100,000. And so my city has asked me to come here and seek the state's assistance for this $100,000 to assist Savage in providing an opportunity for our kids. Since it's used by people around the state, we feel like this is an important piece to economic vitality. While we do charge for field usage, the charge to charge everyone the cost to recoup these costs would really make our field cost prohibitive for a lot of our families. My community is diverse in a lot of ways, including in our socioeconomics, and a large portion of our community lives paycheck to paycheck and struggles to make ends meet. Raising the fees would make the center less accessible to many of the people and children who enjoy the facility today. As you know, much of my work here in St. Paul centers around advocating for kids and making sure that this is a great place for them to start their lives and an opportunity to thrive. One in three people in Savage is under the age of 18, compared to one in four statewide. So this investment in our kids and littlest residents is most appreciated. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. And members, I think that when we were preparing your folders, we may have not included this file in there. And so I'll make sure to send it to you. Closing comments.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I know the bill's not in your folder, but it is pretty straightforward to do a drainage replacement on a big dome where we have indoor soccer and a lot of other sports that happen in our facility. So I hope that summarizes it in lack of the paperwork.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Next on the agenda, Representative Bakeberg, House File 2653. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. House File 2653 appropriates $500,000 to repair and modernize two public boat ramps on Prior Lake. and one ramp on Spring Lake in Scott County. This work is needed to ensure the safety of lake users and to protect the ecology of this these regional destination lakes for outdoor enthusiasts across Minnesota. Wes Steffen is here. Wes is the president of the Spring Lake Association, and he is here on behalf of both the Spring Lake Association and the Prior Lake Association. We're also pleased to be joined by Laura Price from the DNR, who has been an excellent partner as we've worked through addressing the boat ramp issues, and the DNR has been closely involved, and Laura is here for questions. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Steffen to outline the project.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Wesley Steffen, and I'm speaking on behalf of both the Prior Lake and Spring Lake Associations, who represent residents and lake users on Spring Lake and Prior Lake. We would like to thank Representative Ben Bakeberg for sponsoring HF 2653, a bill that would provide funding for boat ramp improvements in Scott County. Scott County is one of the fastest growing counties in the state of Minnesota. That means infrastructure needs are critical. Parks, trails, nature, and lakes are a critical part of what makes the county appealing, but they also have their own unique set of infrastructure needs. Prior Lake is by far the busiest metro lake south of the metro. It is a regional hub for lake enthusiasts with people visiting from all over the south metro, including Scott, Carver, Dakota, Le Sueur, and South Hennepin counties. If boaters deem Prior Lake too busy, they will also launch their boats on Spring Lake. The volume of visitor traffic since 2019 to 2021 has increased by 63% based on boat inspections. The size of Prior Lake combined with the density of traffic makes it feel more crowded than Lake Minnetonka on a summer day. Drought issues the past couple of summers have amplified existing challenges with many of the boat launches in Scott County, especially on Prior and Spring. Namely, they are outdated. They were designed for boats built in the 80s and 90s, which had shorter lengths, less horsepower, and shallower hulls. In low water years, the boat launches do not extend far enough into the lake and deep enough, making it harder for boat owners to get boats in and out of the water without risking damage to their boat, their trailer, or their vehicle, and without damage to the lake bottom. Deep holes get created near the end of the launch due to what is known as power loading of boats as they put them back onto the trailer. This is the equivalent of a two-lane highway built in the early 60s in desperate need of an upgrade to handle today's vehicles and traffic demands. Thankfully, last fall, both lake organizations, in cooperation with the DNR, partnered with local government and private organizations to raise money to patch together a fix on two of the launches. The DeWitt launch on Upper Prior Lake was deemed unusable due to its deteriorating condition caused by broken concrete and the low water levels. If we had not done that, it is likely we would not have been able to get boats off the lake and they would have been stuck in the lake over the winter. It was a Band-Aid fix, and it's very possible more Band-Aids may be required in the future. One of our missions as a nonprofit lake association is to advocate hard and work with other public and private organizations to ensure that our respective water bodies are accessible for public use. We appreciate any funding that help that the Capital Investment Committee and the DNR can give us. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To whomever, does the DNR support this project?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Laura Price. I'm a DNR section manager with the Parks and Trails Division. And yes, we do support this partnership effort. As was described, especially with drought in recent years, we've really seen the need for some major rehab and work on these public water accesses.
Representative Scraba.
That's all. Thank you. Thank you.
Quick closing comments, Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee, for your time. And we look forward to hopefully having this project funded so that we can have this regional hub continue to be a lifeblood for our area. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 2809, Representative Perez Vega. Welcome. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here to present House File 2809 relating to appropriating money to the Latino Museum of Minnesota for $10 million to be granted as a artist and a Latina from the first barrio, first Latino community in the state of Minnesota, District 65B, now as their rep on the west side of St. Paul and right here in our background of the capital city. It's great pride to make sure that we have this as an asset for our state, not only for our Latino community, but for all Minnesotans. This is a necessary space that my constituents had voiced as a valuable resource currently missing, not just in my district, but in our state. The Latino Museum would not only serve local residents, but be a tourist attraction for all. Minnesota is a national leader in arts and culture. We need more spaces like the Latino Museum to continue being a model for other states across the country. This project has two main partners, Rondo Community Land Trust and the Westside Community Organization, also known as WESCO. Founded in 1993, Rondo Community Land Trust is a community-based affordable housing and commercial land trust operating in St. Paul and suburban Ramsey County. The Westside Community Organization, WESCO, works to increase the civic participation of residents by initiating organizing campaigns, providing leadership development opportunities for youth and adults, and by educating and building the power of residents to create the community they envision. Today, we have the director of WESCO, Monica Bravo, here to testify, as well as COCO, the deputy director of Rondo Community Land Trust, in partnership for our CSEP Puede community to be vital in arts and cultura. Thank you.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Monica Bravo, and I am the director of WESCO. I am here today to speak with you about our proposed project. The museum is a permanent historical exhibit, would be, highlighting Latino culture and political contributions to the state of Minnesota, beginning with the late 19th century, Mexican migration to the Westside Flats, and the establishment of the urban Latino communities all along Cesar Chavez Street in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, on Lake Street, and the vibrant communities in greater Minnesota, such as those established in Worthington and Wilmer. The center would include a rotating visual gallery to exhibit local, national, and international artists. There would be space for performances, art, dance, and theater. The Latino community in the state of Minnesota, it has a purchasing power of $5.4 billion, the highest labor force in the state of Minnesota, and this opportunity would be a primary attraction for our state. As a longtime advocate for arts and culture, we are taking the due diligence and care to create a sustainable operation model. Our plans for the Latino History Museum includes rentable artist studios, a cafe teatro for music that would be rented by a local restaurateur, classrooms where schools could come for field trips to tour the center's exhibitions and receive artist workshops on traditional and contemporary art forms. In addition, our organization would be one of the anchor tenants to the new museum. Our strong partnership with Rondo Community Land Trust ensures that we will develop a space that is economically sound. It is imperative that the Latino Museum be located in St. Paul, in the capital city of our state. It would be remiss to contemplate the establishment of such a center and fail to consider the centrality of the west side of St. Paul. The West Side has a deep history of sheltering housing and being a community for immigrants from around the world, once known as the Little Ellis Island of St. Paul. The history of struggle, resistance, and resilience makes the West Side the most fitting place to host the first ever Latino museum. Rondo Community Land Trust and WESCO envision the center to be a catalyst for a larger and long overdue development, poised to repair past harms and reestablish the thriving social, cultural, and economic identity of the West Side and our state. To conclude, culture is the bearer of individual and collective healing. Culture drives our economy, culture strengthens our human bonds, and I urge you to support the Latino History and Cultural Center. Thank you for your time.
Director Coco, are you going to present? You have less than a minute.
Go ahead. Chair Lee, Coco's here to answer any questions that the committee may have in yourself.
So you know questions. Closing comments, Representative.
Thank you. Closing comments. Wow, that was quick. I want to say, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, how this means to not just myself as an artist that grew up, raised in the district that I represent now, to make sure that arts is the answer to unify all of us Minnesotans, and we have to be reflected in our history, and that has to be presented for all of our communities. I believe in our Westside community to lead these actions. I believe in our community artists to take great pride to showcase what Minnesota arts and culture is about, and that's what we're here to present with the Latino Museum on the west side of St. Paul. Gracias.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 2841, Representative Clardy. Welcome, Representative. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Representative Clardy. Thank you, Chair Lee and representatives, for hearing House File 2841. West St. Paul is currently utilizing a 60-year-old technology parts for the water waste infrastructure. And in order to avoid like disastrous residential and commercial backups, it's critical for West St. Paul to obtain funds to replace the outdated lift station and the force main. West St. Paul is asking for $2,496,000 in assistance to help West St. Paul replace the city's longest force main and lift station that pumps about 126,000 gallons every day. And Chair, I have a testifier.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. My name is Dan Nowicki. I'm the Assistant City Manager with the City of West St. Paul. Thank you, Chair Lee and representatives, for having me here today regarding HF 2841, and to Representatives Clardy and Perez Vega for authoring this bill. West St. Paul's request on this bill is for $2.496 million to help us update a long outdated piece of critical infrastructure. Lift station number 4 was built in 1964 and runs on 60-year-old technology and a patchwork of components that have been fabricated and repaired by our heroic public works department as replacement parts are long out of production. The question is not whether these components will fail, it is when. In recent years, this lift station has suffered numerous breakdowns and requires regular work from our sewer staff to keep things flowing as they should. The replacement of Lift Station 4 and approximately a mile of force main is imperative to prevent disastrous residential and commercial sewer backups. As this project is absolutely critical to the safety of our community, it is the only fiscal assistance we're asking of the state this year. One of the major reasons that we're asking for this assistance is West St. Paul took on about $21 million in debt due to the construction of State Highway 3, which you likely know as Robert Street. And the city still owes about $14.7 million on that debt with an annual payment of about $2 million. On behalf of the City Council and the people of West St. Paul and for the safety of our community, I ask you to support our request for assistance on this crucial project. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representatives. And I stand for any questions you may have.
Mr. Burkett, have you applied for funding from the PFA?
That I do not know the answer to. I don't believe that we have, but I can certainly check with our city engineer to make sure that we have not.
Okay, thank you. Closing comments.
Not a glamorous project, but everyone needs to flush. So I hope you keep that in consideration when you look at the bill.
Thank you, Representative Clark.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, Chair Cagle, House File 2888. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So what's four blocks by four blocks and easy to miss up Central Avenue? It's the city of Hilltop, one of Minnesota's smallest cities. Hilltop has about 900 residents, and it's home to about 274 mobile homes, 97 apartment units, 14 single-family homes, and 18 attached multifamily homes, which demonstrates the desperate need for a safe and ADA-accessible tornado shelter in that community. So with that, I will turn it over to Ruth Nelson, the Hilltop City Clerk, Treasurer, and probably does every other job, too, and as well as Dan Gruhl, the architect for this project.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ruth Nelson. I'm the City Clerk Treasurer for Hilltop. Thanks for your consideration and for your support of House File 2888. We're asking for $3 million in funds to help build a new emergency shelter building for the City of Hilltop. As Representative Cagle mentioned, Hilltop is a small community. We have very modest means, resources, and limited funding opportunities. We're here looking for help to build a storm shelter building. As it is now, we're unable to provide a safe place for folks who live in the manufactured homes to go when severe weather threatens. 66% of the housing in Hilltop is manufactured homes. When the storms come, there's no safe place in home. You've got to find a place to go. The current older city hall has a basement that can cram 170 people in, but it's not accessible and no fun to be in, even when it's at 30-40% capacity. With increasing severe weather incidents, we have more and more calls and more requests from the community to find shelter in a safe place. Hilltop has just over 1,000 people in the population. Our tax base and means are limited. The median household income in Hilltop is $40,700. 87% of folks in Hilltop live in low to median incomes. So we're a very modest place full of hardworking folks who just need a safe place to go when the weather goes south. Our population is 50% Hispanic or Latinx, 24% white, 17% African American, and the remainder are American Indian, Asian, and other races. But most notably, I'll keep circling back, 66% of our folks live in manufactured homes. We have a dire need in the city, and we can't take this on alone. Our pockets are shallow, but the city is reaching all the way down into all pockets, going farther than the lint. We're committing $1 million of our own resources to the project and asking you for $3 million. So we've got 25% on the table, which is a huge reach for us, but we're that committed to doing it. If additional costs arise beyond the $4 million we're estimating, we will look to foundations, private funds, and other community partner grants for funding. But right now, we're committing that $1 million to the project. The building will provide shelter to about 700 people. The ground level of the building and basement will all be shelter. Once you're through the doors, you're in a safe place. Even though the building that you see pictured on your handout is marked Hilltop City Hall, that's really more of a wayfinder. About 20% of the space is dedicated to the city office, council chambers, and a polling place and record storage. The remaining 80% is dedicated emergency shelter space. If needed, that 20%, those doors can be opened and we can put more bodies in there, because once you're in the doors, you're in the shelter. Dan Goyle from Ortel Architects is the chief architect of the project, and I'll have him speak a bit about the site itself.
So we are out of time, so we're going to move to a number of questions and then proceed. Okay. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cagle. Could you just, so you, it's being described as an emergency tornado shelter, but as I read through the description of the project, it sounds more like a community center. Could you explain why it's being described as an emergency shelter when it's so much more than just that?
Chair Cagle or Ms. Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Franson. So the main reason is so that the residents of Hilltop have a safe place to go during these extreme weather events. But knowing me, I like to get the biggest bang for the buck, you know? And so Hilltop is a small community, and this building could really double as not only a safe place for people to go during storms, but a place where they could have a little bit more office space, have a community room for the folks. There's a playground there too, that they're gonna, you guys were gonna relocate that, correct? And so it's really, the main goal is to make sure that they have a safe place to go for the shelter, but why just have it be a closed building most of the time? And, you know, let's get the most bang for our buck here.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it just, to me, it sounds a little bit misleading, because the storm shelter won't, as you said, won't be used very often, right? And you don't want it to remain empty, but I think it's misleading to lead with that it's an emergency shelter when the main purpose is going to be a community center.
Chair Cagle, close the comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a really great project that would help keep the folks in Hilltop safe. It's a tiny but mighty community, and if you want to door knock a whole city sometime, you can come on up to Hilltop with me. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have two bills for Representative Abaje. First up, House File 2942. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I am presenting House File 2942. This bill is requesting $6 million in capital investment to acquire property, design, and construct a new youth center facility in North Minneapolis. North Minneapolis has limited places where young people can go after school, where they can be around trusted adults, and have a safe place to play and learn. The state's investment in our young people should start at the beginning, and we cannot wait until we need to intervene until after something has gone wrong. But in fact, in my community, we have faced very tragedies where we know that we need to intervene and support our young people. A dedicated youth center, especially one that can complement the burgeoning programs across the district and the city, will be beneficial and have positive outcomes for the youth across the city, and particularly in North Minneapolis. And with that, I'll turn to my two testifiers who can explain more.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Clarence Hightower. I'm Executive Director of Community Action Partnership of Hennepin County. And again, we're here to talk to you about the Rosa Parks Center for Development of African American Youth. And this center was designed for youth by youth. This is their thought. This is what they want to have happen in their community. This center has brought together three important entities in our community. First of all, the Minneapolis Public Schools. The Minneapolis Public Schools has designated one of their facilities as surplus facilities, one of the school buildings, which this Rosa Parks Center would move into. The second one is hopefully the funding from this body. And then the third one would be Community Action Partnership, which would own the building and operate it for the young folks in our community. All of us know that in times like this, we need to double down on what we do for young folks, especially black kids trying to make their way. One of the things that we're painfully aware of is that a lot of what we see on TV and the violence that we see on TV, these kids live and learn in those communities. Let me now turn to our second testifier.
Thank you, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, my name is AJ Flowers. I'm the project coordinator for the Young People Task Force. And first, I would like to say thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee for having us on. I'm going to explain to you exactly what this youth center is. The mission of this youth center is to ensure that our African-American youth are empowered and armed with long-term tools needed to thrive as leaders and ambassadors of community peace and transformation within the community, along with self-sustaining capacity to achieve economic self-sufficiency and entrepreneur independence. We will do that by focusing on seven service components. Those service components will be self-actualization. We believe one must believe in a self, one must have self-confidence, and one must believe in their own self-value in order to move forward. Number two will be reconciliation and mediation, to ensure that our young people learn how to reconcile and our young people know how to mediate when they get in such tense moments when we see in these violent situations over North Minneapolis. Number three will be economic development, to ensure our young people can work in the workforce, our young people can do internships and even places like this so that they can learn how the civic engagement and how different things work around their community, that they can be a part of the actual development of their economics. Number four will be education. Education is always vital. In order for our young people to be educated, we believe we'll work with on-site partners to tutor them on GED, ABE, and also with college assistance programs so that they can learn how to actually fill out that college application. Number five would be recreation, creative expression, along with music and arts. Our young people are really into their recreation along with their creative expression, such as their arts, music, and different theatrical ways where they can express themselves. Number six will be holistic health and wellness. That's mental, physical, and spiritual health and wellness for our young people to ensure that they are capable and ready. And lastly will be leadership, to ensure our young people can become the next leaders of their community and be ambassadors for their own community so that they can participate in their own recovery. Thank you for your time, and I would actually support House File 2942.
Thank you. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Abaje, for bringing this. I actually had a long discussion this summer with Martha Dimmick about things like this, and it's really good for our youth to have these opportunities and more of these opportunities. So thank you for bringing it.
Closing comments, Representative Ajay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I hope that you will support this bill.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, House File 1054, Representative Ajay. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you again, committee members. I also have an amendment, Mr. Chair. Do you want to move
Please
that now?
Please describe the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment updates the recipient of the funds to Northgate's nonprofit organization, Minneapolis Climate Action.
Please proceed.
So House File 1024 is a project meant to provide an opportunity to a living wage paying job to more members in the metro area. The project seeks funding for $4 million to renovate an existing building to create a training center for engineering and technical jobs in the solar energy sector. The training center is located in the heart of North Minneapolis and is accessible to more people who traditionally would not have access to such training. The additional use of these funds is to engage in planning for a second lot owned by Northgate for the expansion of the training center. So Northgate will work through its nonprofit Minneapolis Climate Action to establish a vision of creating a training facility that can be used by varied partners in the business, nonprofit, or trades. It will be a multifaceted facility that will have the tools necessary for different partners to come in and offer their expertise and training to a community that needs it. The focus on renewable energy is to ensure that low to moderate income people can learn the skills they need to be effective in this industry. And from this training, people will be exposed to other industries, particularly those in union trades, and move on to full careers. A living wage paying job is transformational. And we need that transformation in North Minneapolis. So here with me today is Jamez Staples, President and CEO of Renewable Energy Partners, who can discuss more details about the project.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Jamez Staples. Thank you, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Jamez Staples, CEO of Renewable Energy Partners and Northgate Development. As a private sector solar development firm, we focused on creating jobs around solar energy and other emerging sector careers as we see the climate change issue being further exacerbated. So thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 1054. Funds for this bill will cover the costs and overruns associated with the improvements from the previous appropriation in 2021, as well as the planning for the adjacent facility. In 2017, Northgate Development acquired the former state-owned Workforce Center building with 100% private funds, specifically for the purposes of bringing training for the emerging sector of clean energy to the urban community. For those of you who didn't know, the state of Minnesota recently passed the 100% clean energy bill, which basically kind of confirms that there will be billions of dollars devoted towards clean energy. And the objective for us is to make sure that people of color have access to those necessary skills and training. The federal government has also passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which ultimately is billions of dollars that also come down from the federal government to the state to help also create these pathways of opportunity. We can address the issue of climate change and poverty simultaneously. However, the only accredited solar training program currently is in White Bear Lake at Century College, which is a two-hour public transit commute from North Minneapolis, where the Training Center project is located. This facility is located on the highest-used transit line in the state of Minnesota, which is the 5-bus line, and also the D line, which is a 5-minute bus ride from the Twin Stadium. The Twin Stadium is basically the adjoining hub where the Blue Line, the Green Line, and the Southwest Light Rail all connect. That means it's a regional access point for all public where all public entities can have access. As the only African-American solar developer in the state of Minnesota, our objective has been to create jobs and create the opportunity for folks to have access to those jobs and also the training that's necessary. So thank you for the opportunity.
Close the comments, Representative Ajay.
Again, thank you, committee, for your time. I know some of you have seen this project before, so really look forward to your support this year. Thank you.
Next on the agenda, House File 1413, Representative Curran. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. Today we have House File 1413, which provides funding for a 1.5-mile missing link of the Rice Creek North Regional Trail. This section would make a connection through Circle Pines and Lino Lakes that communities have been trying to get since 2008, so they've been waiting over 15 years now. And this would connect communities in both Anoka and Ramsey counties. This project would include bridgeways and boardwalks for safe and convenient use, and allows for trail goers to enjoy the beautiful scenery in the area throughout our Senate district and across the state. If fully completed, this trail would connect the metro area to Duluth. Today we are asking for funding for that 1.5-mile section within our Senate district in our community. And with that, I'll turn it over to our testifier.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Andy Solta. I'm Assistant Park Director for Anoka County. And thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1413, which would complete a critical missing link of trail corridor on a 25-mile regional trail section located in the northern metro area. This missing trail link has statewide significance and value because the same trail will take you all the way up to the Duluth area and gateway to the North Shore. On a national scale, the same trail intersects with the Mississippi River in the southern portion of the county in Fridley, which is part of U.S. Bicycle Route 45, a planned interstate bicycling facility that stretches all the way from Itasca State Park to the Gulf of Mexico. As a brief project overview, this 1.5-mile missing trail link would be constructed on the regional parkland along the scenic Rice Creek in Anoka County. The trail design includes two pedestrian bridges that pass over the Rice Creek, floating sections of boardwalk across wetland areas, and 10-foot asphalt trails that traverse through native prairies and oak forests for education. This requested capital investment of $5.725 million will meet the growing demands of the citizens of Minnesota that value the use of trails for outdoor recreation, enjoyment, education and the environment, multimodal transportation, safe routes to school, community connections, and simply connecting people to the great outdoors. With your support, Anoka County is poised to stand and stands ready to deliver this important trail project for the citizens of Minnesota. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman and Representatives, for your time and consideration supporting this missing trail link project. Your legislative leadership is greatly valued and respected. Stand ready for your question.
Thank you, Director. So the language in the bill says this does not require non-state contribution, and so is the request the full amount of the project?
Mr. Chair, yes, the request is in the full amount of the project. The county has leveraged other funding sources through Parks and Trails Legacy, through federal transportation dollars to complete the other previous 23 miles of trail, but we are asking for the state's full assistance in pushing this project through for the last 1.5
miles. Will the county be able to chip in more for this as we consider going forward?
We can certainly bring that back to the county leadership to provide recommendation on that.
Thank you, Director. Closing comments.
Thank you, Chair and Committee, for your consideration. We are really just looking to connect a missing link in our community, and I appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda, Representative Hussein, House File 2935. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. This bill, House File 2935, is YWCA. This bill will provide funding YWCA St. Paul Capital Investment 9 multi-property issue in St. Paul housing and a program service for homeless and families. This bill will also provide funding for a new roof for 375 Selby Avenue, St. Paul, Minnesota, where is appropriate human services and program service, supportive house employment and services youth development program. YWCA St. Paul has been providing critical needs services in St. Paul, Ramsey County since 1907. And today it's important, part of the safety for our community members struggling with poverty, homelessness, and unemployment. I would like to yell for my testifier.
Welcome, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you so much, Representative Hussein, Chair Lee, Vice Chair Ryer, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Gay Adams-Massey, CEO at YWCA St. Paul. Thank you for hearing testimony on House File 2935. I'd like to just briefly share a story of a single mother in our housing program. Cherie, that's what we'll call her, experienced homelessness, domestic violence, family addiction, trauma, and mental health struggles starting in childhood and throughout her life. When she was a mother of three and homeless because of domestic violence, she was accepted into YWCA St. Paul's transitional housing program, where she received customized support services to help her stabilize her life, build new skills, and connect to her community. She was determined that her children would have a better life, and with support from YWCA St. Paul, she returned to school, graduated from college with a degree in nursing. She got a full-time position as a nurse at a hospital where she interned, and she secured a future of safe and stable housing for her family, increased her income to be financially stable, and gained the confidence she needed to really continue in life. For Cherie and others, achieving housing stability is foundational to family stability, as well as success in school and employment. YWCA St. Paul has been providing critically needed supportive housing services to women and their families for decades. House File 2935 will authorize funding for repairs to the YWCA St. Paul buildings that provide families like Cherie's a safe place to live as they build long-term stability for their families. It will also fund critically needed restoration and repairs to YWCA St. Paul's main site, where our staff run our supportive housing, employment, and youth development programs. Our housing and other programs are a critical part of the safety net in St. Paul and Ramsey County. We're rooted in the Rondo community, focus our programs on low-income and very low-income women and their families from communities of color, more than 90% of whom are African-American. And we work tirelessly to address their critical needs and to strengthen our community. Our buildings need investment to continue this important work. We ask for your support of House File 2935. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And notice you're going to be doing some roof work here. Are they pitched or flat roofs?
Both. We have mostly pitched roofs in supportive housing at the main office. We do have some flat roofs.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a lot of members on the committee like pitched roofs here. Also, a little known fact, I once spent a night in Hawaii.
Really?
Representative Hussein, closing comments.
Thank you. I urge all my committees that support House File 2935. It's providing employment, youth program opportunity. It has been a backbone for our community for many years. Please support this good cause. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Next on the agenda, House File 2589, Representative Fogelman. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, committee members. I have before you Bill House File 2589. It is for the City of Lakefield. The original bill is for $6 million. After speaking with the mayor and some others, this ask has been decreased to $250,000. And with that, I would like to turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, I'm John Friel. I'm a wastewater engineer with Short Elliott Hendrickson. Thank you, Chair, committee, staff, and Rep. Fogelman. I'm representing the city as the wastewater engineer and project manager. The focus of this request relates to their wastewater treatment plant and the investment on that. The city of Lakefield has a population of 1,700, and it's located in southwestern Minnesota. The city owns and operates their wastewater treatment facility, which is an oxidation ditch activated sludge secondary treatment facility. The lead operator in Lakefield, it does a great job. He's full-time operator. He's diligent, and he's also a farmer outside of being a full-time operator. The facility dates back to 1914, with the service building still in use for electrical controls, a backup generator, disinfection. The majority of the rest of the facility dates back to 1988, and then they did do an upgrade in 1995 of their solids handling system. So overall, the facility is over almost 30 years old. That's why it's in need of an investment. So the needs relate to maintaining the reliability and doing this upgrade to help with the aging equipment and conditions. This wastewater plant was part of a greater citywide improvements project that included the highway and then the sanitary sewers. Because those projects now are substantially complete, that's why we're reducing our request, because the wastewater plant is the last project being completed, and it's approximately 40% into construction. The collection system did that work, helped alleviate INI infiltration and inflow issues that created peak flows to the wastewater plant. So our solution is basically rehabilitation of the wastewater plant. And 5 years ago, when we worked on an alternatives report, we did consider other alternatives. Rehabbing the existing wastewater plant was deemed the most affordable option, And because the plant has a lot of concrete that has a lot of life still left in it, that also contributed to this option being the most feasible and economical. The wastewater portion of the project is $6.7 million. And we're looking to have the construction complete by the end of the year. And that's where I'm at.
Mr. Friel, can you provide language for us with the updated amount, just so that we have that as we consider this proposal going forward?
Yep. The updated request is $250,000.
The language that will be associated with that so that the project can move forward later on.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members, for considering this. Thank you.
Next bill on the agenda, House File 2622, Representative Koslowski. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members. I am here for House File 2622, the Great Lakes Aquarium. This is a bill I'm very excited to be bringing forward and appreciate you hearing the bonding request for the Great Lakes Aquarium, which is located in Duluth. We are seeking a request for $962,000 for capital improvement projects and pre-design for building expansion. And the completion of these projects will improve water and energy conservation, increase accessibility, and expand educational opportunities. And I can tell you that as a parent of a nine-year-old, this is one of her favorite places to go, especially because the Great Lakes Aquarium offers culturally affirming exhibits, for example, in the Ojibwe language, accessible play spaces, and things like the Great Lakes Interactive Water Table that features, again, the Ojibwe language event venues, as well as my favorite, otter birthday parties. So here with me today is the Executive Director, Jay Walker, to share more about this request.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jay Walker. I'm the Executive Director of the Great Lakes Aquarium, and I appreciate your time today, and thank you, Representative Kozlowski, for supporting us, House File 2622. As mentioned, the Aquarium is a nonprofit organization that was originally opened in 2000 with charged by the legislature with delivering freshwater education. In the past 10 years, we are still, or sorry, in the past 23 years that we have been open, we are still engaging, inspiring, and encouraging stewardship of water and wildlife. In the past 10 years, we've seen significant growth. We have seen about a 75% increase in attendance. And then last year, we saw 200,000 people visit the aquarium. We have 10,000 students that visit the aquarium, K-12 students that come to the aquarium every year. And we reach about another 10,000 through our outreach programs and teacher resource kits. The Great Lakes Aquarium is requesting this appropriation for building expansion and for capital improvements, for upgrading our water treatment so that increase efficiency of 30%, so we can reduce our water use by 30%. We will also have other projects in here that will help us decrease our energy use by about 34% for electricity. We also are seeing an increased demand for early childhood programs, and part of this ask is to help build a classroom for that so that we can meet this demand. The current programs that we have outgrown our room that we have, which is a shared classroom space. This will help us to meet the needs of this specific age group. The aquarium has reached a threshold where demand exceeds the original building's capacity, and the GLA is poised for growth and is seeking support to move from a successful local attraction to a regional experience. I want to thank you for your consideration of House File 2622, and I welcome any questions.
Closing comments, Representative Kozlowski.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for the opportunity to hear this. As we've heard, this is going to be a really big investment for, really investing in bringing folks to the area, as well as supporting our families and our youngest learners, which is some of the best investments we can make. And we appreciate your consideration in optimizing our future through this Great Lakes Aquarium ask.
Thank you. Last bill on the agenda will be House File 3127. Representative Hussein will be presenting on behalf of Chair Hassan. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thanks, committee members and Mr. Chair. I am House File 3127 is very important to our community, and this is Kajok Foundation. Kajok Foundation is a long, many years existing in the community for the past 25 years, and they have been working with mentorships and helping kids, and this will provide an opportunity to get a workforce place center for them to provide opportunity for our young generation in East African community in Metro. Also, Kajok has been working throughout the state, not only in Minnesota, not in only St. Paul, Minnesota, but the greater Minnesota also, Wilmer, and a couple other cities, St. Cloud. And I would like to have my testifier, Executive Director, Muhammad Farr.
Welcome, please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. I would like to express my gratitude to Representative Hussein for his leadership and in terms of bringing you this bill before you. My name is Mohamed Farah. I am the executive director of Kajok, founded in 2007. We are a national Somali American youth development organization. We are dedicated to enhancing the lives of Somali American youth by utilizing education, mentorship, employment, and the arts. Our mission is to provide community-based and culturally specific programs and services to youth and their families through education, the arts, and economic development. As a statewide organization, not only actually in Minnesota, but we also work in different states, such as our neighbors in North Dakota. We work with East African community members. We focus on our efforts in development of youth and families in making them as economically sufficient as possible. The proposed bill before you is an investment in our young people, where we will create a workforce training center in Minneapolis. We will focus on making sure young people succeed in job skills training for a wide range of employment skills, entrepreneurship, and ongoing career learning center. Some of these training includes, but not limited to, information technology, health sector, and health careers such as CNA and phlebotomy, accounting, business management, marketing, business administration, public service, and many others. Providing hands-on training is an essential part of this program. I would like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of this committee. I would also like to thank Representative Hussein. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I would like to call on Mr. Bill McCrum, who's an architect from Hopewell 360.
Thank you. 2 minutes, so please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Bill McCrum. I'm an architect with Hopewell 360, a corporation that focuses on sustainability and efficiently building buildings. The Workforce Training Center is located on the intersection of 26th and Minnehaha in Minneapolis. It's on mass transit. It's a building that is in compliance with all of the zoning ordinances and parking requirements. It's a net zero building, and we will have solar energy on the roof in other places. And the significance of the building, it's 4 stories over what we call a pedestal, and we have a manufacturing facility that will create prefabricated modules. 84 modules will be lifted into place within 2 weeks. So after the pedestal is created, we'll have a building within 180 days of the start of construction. The building consists of spaces like general office, community service offices, a dental and mental health office, vocational training, developmental achievement, educational arts, and possibly some retail service businesses on the first floor. As a licensed practicing professional, looking at a basket full of options for this project and this site, I would say that the proposal is the highest and best use for this site in Minneapolis. Thanks for hearing our request.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how many people participate in Kajuk?
Director.
Mr. Chair, Representative. So within the past year, within our workforce development, without a center locate, without a workforce training, we've worked with over 700 young people and adults as well. That's just people that we've worked with just in the last couple of years and training them and finding jobs throughout the state, not just in Minneapolis.
Representative Rao.
Thank you.
Close the comments, Representative Hussein.
Thank you. This bill is a great opportunity, training, and will create an income, employment, and youth leadership opportunity. And we need to empower our youth. This is the right organization that has been done it in the past and will do it. Also, Kajok means stay away, or is giving a warning for our kids. That is where it comes from. So it created many years ago, and it's telling the kids to learn their language and tell them, hey, stay away from this. Something that's going to hurt you, and this is good for you.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Representative Ryer, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 27th?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ryer moves approval of the minutes for March 27th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Members, our next meeting will be on Monday, April 3rd. We'll be acting on House File 24, the Less Service Line Bill, which was heard, amended, and laid over. Amendments are due by 1 p.m. on Friday. On Monday, we also have more hearings on an informational basis. The meeting is adjourned.